One of the joys of hosting Radio Times has been interviewing guests at the very beginning of their careers. I interviewed Lisa Scottolini many years ago when her first novel was published. She's gone on to become a popular writer, the author of more than 20 books with millions in print. She's teamed up with her daughter, Francesca Scottolini Saratella, to write a weekly column called Chick Lit for the Philadelphia Inquirer and to write some books together. The newest one is Meet Me at Emotional Baggage Claim, about their intertwined lives, and they both join us here in our Philadelphia studios. And Lisa Scottolini, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be back.
Well, we're happy to have you back, and Francesca, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you here. Lisa, let me begin with you. You also wrote a book together with your daughter called Best Friends, Occasional Enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still a pretty much a good description of your relationship with your daughter?
I think it is, and I think I would venture to say that we're not atypical in that regard.
Right.
Mothers and daughters, and we get them at our signings, so I sort of know this. It's a wonderful bond, and I think we are best friends. I mean, we really are. But that doesn't mean that we don't fight
right.
over dumb stuff, and sometimes over not so dumb stuff. I mean, what I'm so proud of in her is that she says she speaks her mind. And I think her generation does in a way that maybe we didn't. And so it's nice to have her be herself and find her voice.
You have written about your own mother mm-hmm. and your inability, for instance, to cook spaghetti together with your mother. So here you can't cook spaghetti with your mother, but you can write with your daughter. What does that tell us?
Volumes.
Well, what does that tell
us? Basil-scented volumes. Well, we cook together, too. I mean, I think it's what's sort of the book is about. I always view it. It's a little bit of a throwback to Irma Bombeck. You know, this is our fourth one together. It started with Why My Third Husband Will Be a Dog, which isn't the kind of title you want to get a date with,
and
but has really grown through my relationship with Francesca. The second was My Nest Isn't Empty, It Just Has More Closet Space. Because really, I think for most mothers, and probably for fathers too, but since I have ovaries, I'll speak to us, is that the defining relationship is to my daughter. And we have moments that I think are very typical, where they're full of flavor and vim and all the stuff of life. And you have to sort of write it down and slow it down to examine it.
What do you think, Francesca?
Yeah, I think we're so lucky to sort of to get this the chance to write it down, because it does, like my mom said, give you that minute to take a step back. Say, is this really worth it? Because so many of our fights, I don't even know what the topic is. People say, oh, what do you fight about? I said, I don't really know, but we find a way to. But I think that our communication with each other is really open and all the time, and that's probably the best thing and the worst thing about our relationship.
Which is that that you have a very, I would say, intense bond and relationship.
Yeah, intense can take on such a negative connotation, because
sure.
I do feel like I'm 26 now. I live in New York City, so it's not so much that she's this helicopter mom or that she's overbearing, but just that we really are play a large role in each other's lives.
Well, your name is Francesca Scottolini Saratella.
What a mouthful, Francesca Scottolini Saratella.
I know, we're like Italian menus. It's really what I was thinking.
And why did we give her all those names?
Well, the Francesca part is after my father, Frank.
Okay.
And I have a best friend, Franca, so it's a very resonant name. Every Italian has like tons of Franks and Pauls and Johns. If there's an apostle in there somewhere, we're like paying it lip service. But she really, you know, it's funny because you pick a name for a kid, you don't ever think it will be on a book cover.
Yes.
But there it is.
I don't know why you wouldn't think that, being an author yourself. You should have a little faith.
At the time, I was broke and struggling and trying to become an author. I never dreamed I'd get published, much less get to be on this show.
So how did you become an author? I know your mother worked as a lawyer for some time, went to law school, and then became a writer. How about for you?
Exactly. Well, I had this great privilege of watching her build her writing career, and I think that was even more inspiring than seeing any ready-made success, because it really showed me, it demystified that process of how one does get into a creative profession, how you make that work, the hard work and the perseverance that's required for it. So it was an option. You know, I'm so lucky to not have a parent who's just, you know, crossing her fingers, holding out for law school with me. She's been very supportive, but I was never pressured to go into her footsteps. It's just, you know, I found I loved it. I loved reading and I love writing, and I wanted to be a vet just to be different, but blood is so gross.
And we need a vet, damn it. We really need
a vet. Have, how many animals do you have now?
I'm too embarrassed to say, because
I'm
going to be on like A&E soon, animal hoarding. Well, now we have three puppies. So I was the five dogs and
You don't
chickens.
She's lost count.
No, because at some point it doesn't really matter. It's like divorces. They pile up. Oh, how did that happen? Oh, I wasn't barely there. But I sort of think, I said this in one book, and I think the impetus for me to start was so much that, you know, I'm on my own. I am divorced twice. There's not a guy. And I sort of wanted to say to women, hey, you might find yourself in that position. You didn't intend it. But certainly whether you're widowed or divorced, you might live alone. And it ain't so bad. Mm. And so you want to try to, and the dogs are part of that. That I was like, you know, this was my insight, whether it's insightful or not. I'll leave it to you to judge. But the idea was to fill your life with love. You can't control if someone will love you. But you can control if you give love. And your heart doesn't know the difference. And that's sort of how I feel. Mm. So I have a life full of love. Am I dating anybody? No. But I have a great kid. And I have adorable puppies and a corgi. Can you ask for more?
Well, certainly not when it comes to the corgi department. I have to say to our listeners that Lisa Scalini and I share a devotion to Welsh corgis. I have one as well. Interesting you mentioned dating, because at the very end of the book, Francesca, you each write letters to each other, and you want your mom to date. You're saying, you know, maybe it's time to get out there a little bit.
Well, yeah. I mean, the truth is, I've really come around to recognizing that she's happy, and that makes me happy. So but I want her to be open to it, because I think she's adorable. She's so dateable, and she makes all these jokes. If you'd read these, you'd think, you know, she's just absolutely deal breaker, but she's not. She's great. And it's also just, you know, we want the same things for each other. And I think that's part of that transition from a parent-child relationship to one of adult friends, of that I want her to have happiness on every possible level, be loved on every level. And it's not so much, oh, you want someone to date your mom? She's not just my mom. She's a woman that I respect and admire, and I want all of that for her.
Well, it's so interesting, because if you're someone my age who's grown up in the women's movement, I'm a feminist, right, proudly. You in a way, you send your kid a mixed message if it's like, you know what, how's your life? You have a great job? Great. You have a great apartment? Great. You work out. You do all the good things, functional, but you're not seeing anybody. Oh, that's too bad. You don't want to send the message you're incomplete without a guy. And I think we both feel like, gee, we want you to be happy. Does that include a guy? Yeah. But are you incomplete without? Maybe. I don't know.
Right. Ironically, it's a hard thing for us to say to each other, you know, just because you've always been a strong, independent woman, and I know that you like that about yourself, so sometimes it's hard to say, but still, maybe be open.
Well, here's what you wrote, Francesca. Speaking of love, I hope and believe you will find romance in the next 5 years. You haven't put yourself out there much in terms of dating, but you can change that whenever you want to. You may make yourself more available, or I wouldn't be surprised if your charm attracts someone against your will, and you go on from there.
Right.
You're giving dating advice to your mother.
Hey, you know, with us, it's like, whoever has got an idea, just throw it out there on the table.
Well, those letters in the back were her idea. And I think the truth is, we, you know, this is very raw stuff in these books, even though it's funny. And it's certainly poignant. We write about more poignant things, especially with an aging mother. I think I'm sort of that sandwich generation who's dealing with a parent who's older and infirm and still full of vim in many ways. But it's, I always think it goes back to writing, that notion, Strunk and White idea, that writing has to be specific. And above all, that has to be true. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether you're writing fiction or not, and now that I do both, I realize how amazingly the object is the same, truth. And if you don't tell it specifically and you don't tell it true, and you're not willing to say on a microphone, to your mother that, then it doesn't resonate at all. It just sounds kind of generic. And I think, I'm proud that we do that. I think we speak for a lot of people when we say that out loud.
Well, one of the things that you say to Jessica, to Francesca, is I'm trying to save you from whom to divorce.
Look at me laughing at my own. Oh, I'm so funny.
I'm trying to save you. I mean, your fear that she might get divorced like
that. Well, here, I can sit here at 57 and say, you know, I'm really happy. I wouldn't change anything in my life. However, would I want that for my daughter? No. Mm. It's a hard row to hoe. And she puts a great face on it when she says she saw me build a career. And that's a nice way of saying, for 5 years, we were really, really broke. And there's really, really a struggle. And I think that is a good lesson, too. But I'm happy that we came out of that.
I think I also saw her build happiness. And I think it's such a misconception, the idea. I mean, I don't know about statistics, but right, I think the idea that children of divorce, which is a term I don't even love, I have a family, I don't have a divorce, but children of divorce are so much more prone to being divorced. I don't know about statistically, but emotionally, that does not feel true, because I learned that it's the hard work it takes, when it's, you know, what, how much you fight and how much you don't, and I mean, fight for the relationship is what I mean. And I feel like I'm very realistic, but still very optimistic about that. And what I think was my interest in writing those letters at the back, where we each wrote a letter to each other about, you know, for the next 5 years, was to really stay forward looking, because I think for so many mothers and daughters, even close ones, it's easy to be always backwards looking. Oh, when you were a kid, you know, and I think for my mom, it's hard to be, I'm still that little kid to her. And the only way that our relationship can progress is if we're willing to face front, look forward. And that's what I tried to do with that.
Well, and is there a reason that you don't date?
I guess I've just been so busy. And I don't go out a lot for, you know, just like swan around, or I do a lot of library fundraising. That's the only reason I leave the house, other than to tour for books. But otherwise, I feel full and happy. Yeah. And I have no excuse. What
it's
can
just
I tell
hard
you?
To meet her. That's what I always tell her. I say, you're unmeetable. You're not undateable. You're unmeetable because you're out in Pennsylvania.
I go on blind dates. I try to, you know, do that when people say, please, please, please. And then I do.
And what happens?
It's usually some kind of detonation, somewhere between nuclear reaction, all of the, you know, incendiary variety, and not in a good way. Like, it hasn't worked out, is what I'm trying to say.
There's a writer's description of a bad date, right?
Yes, exactly.
Right, an atomic explosion.
So whose idea was it to start writing together, Francesca?
Gosh, that's a good
or
question.
Did that evolve over time?
It sort of did. She had been writing the column in the Chick Wit and Philadelphia Inquirer, and then when she would go on tour and be away and wouldn't be able to participate in and write something for it, I noticed they weren't running anything, and so we sort of then started talking about it, like, hey, maybe, I mean, she always puts it that she was writing about me constantly, so people might pique their curiosity of what I might have to say for myself. So then I submitted to them and slowly just built that more regularly, and then the books came out.
It's a funny thing, because having been writing since 94 when I was on the show, and thank you, God, for having me, and thank you, Marty, for having me. You know, the emergence of social media is astounding. And that's great. And one of the reasons it's kind of great for someone like me is I remember when I only would get letters from readers. So what happened with the column is I started to get email who said, because it was clearly striking notes with mothers and daughters. And people said, gee, I would love to hear from your daughter. And so now we have regular people who come to the books and to the column who basically, the 20-year-olds will write, I totally identify with her, and you're kind of boring. And the 50-year-olds go, they actually look to what she says to sort of understand their adult child better. Adult children is a really interesting issue and sort of isn't much discussed. We have a lot of how to parent a 12-year-old, but how to parent a 26-year-old is a different matter. And you're still in the picture, especially if you're us.
Well, indeed. Let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation talking with Lisa Scottolini and her daughter, Francesca Saratella. And they have co-authored a book called Meet Me at Emotional Baggage Claim. They write together for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and we will talk more about their relationship. Also open up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit have been studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders since 1964 and are currently performing research to develop improved treatments. Symptoms may include mood swings, low energy, and low motivation. Initial evaluations are offered to determine those who are eligible for treatment. More about Penn's Depression Research Unit at 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
Wherever you live, whatever you're into, Newsworks.org has you covered. Whether it's insightful reporting on Philadelphia city life, New Jersey politics, or small wonders in Delaware, you're covered. Lovers of the arts, health and science, looking for something unique? You guessed it, covered. Repairing your carburetor? Okay, maybe not everything. But for solid journalism and thought-provoking discussion, choose WHYY's Newsworks.org. Smart. Local. News. Covered.
We've all heard about efforts to feed hungry children in Africa, but now some artists are saying they want Africa to help cold people in Scandinavia.
We need to make a difference in Norway. We need to collect our radiators, ship them over there, and spread some warmth and spread some smiles.
And yes, it's tongue-in-cheek, but with a serious purpose to challenge stereotypes. We'll hear more next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with best-selling writer Lisa Scottolini and her daughter Francesca Saratella, who has, gone into the family business. She and her mother write a column together called Chick Wit, which you can read in the Philadelphia Inquirer. They've also written several books together, including a new one called Meet Me at Emotional Baggage Claim. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Lisa, you talk about, and I'm a parent of an adult child, that kind of process that you have to go through, realizing, yes, they're still your child. They will always be your child, but they don't need you in the same kind of way.
Right. I mean, I think that's true. They don't need you in the same kind of way, although there's a part of me that says, they still need you. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I talk with all my girlfriends, and we're like, we are so much more, I don't know if it's, I think it's good, so I'm not going to say I think it's bad, so much more involved, I mean, in our kids' lives at their age. And we're not in a directive way, but just that I know what she's doing every day.
Right.
I think when my parents took me to college, and that was only at Penn, so it's 20 minutes from the house, it was kind of like, I'll see you on Sunday for dinner. I went home every Sunday for dinner. But I don't think they knew what courses I took, what grades. I mean, they didn't, you know, and I love them to death, and they loved me to death. But it's a different thing. So the problem is, if you know stuff, then it's going to lead you to A, worry, or B, meddle, or C, like, you know,
nag.
Pray the rosary. You nag, that too.
Sorry, Lisa.
And that's what you got to be careful not to do.
Do you see that among your friends, Francesca, that they have this email texting relationship with
their parents? Yeah, definitely. Especially my girlfriends. The majority of my girlfriends have a very close relationship with their moms. I don't know if it's the technology or if it was just a different generation of raising, you know, methods of raising a child. But for sure, most of my girlfriends talk. If they give a bad breakup, they're calling their mom. If they, you know, have a bad day at work, they're calling their mom.
And was there a time in your life growing up, I'm thinking of those teenage years when, you know, I used to joke about my son being in the witness protection program because he could never tell me anything about what he was doing. But was
right.
there a time you wanted to be separated from your mom? You wanted more distance?
I mean, the truth is for us, I think that this transition of sort of really growing up and becoming an adult and transitioning from that parent-child relationship has been the one of greatest transition. Because even in the teenage years, certainly there were some slammed doors. But the truth is, the stakes are low. You're living, you know, dinner's going to come at 6 p.m. and you're going to sit back down at the table. It works itself out just because of the nature of the arrangement.
Right.
Where now, you know, we could lose touch, and I don't want to, and she doesn't want to, but we have to make it work so that we're not, you know, constantly two little chihuahuas fighting at each other, which is what I like in us too. But, you know, so that sort of has been the tougher task. And I do want, I mean, we have some distance, but...
We do.
not if she
don't dare you.
So, using the title of your book, "Emotional Baggage Claim," I mean, what is your emotional baggage?
Well, that's sort of. I want to be her emotional baggage. You know, like and my mother is my emotional baggage, and it's sort of a funny way to say, you know, and it's to me, it's the most wonderful lesson in life. I've lost my father 10 years ago, actually. Well, it doesn't matter, but 10 years ago, recently, this week, and. We carry those people we've lost if we love them. And that's good and bad. It can be a source of great comfort, as anybody knows who's lost a parent or lost anybody. Mm. But at the same token, if you have a mother, I know what my mother will say in any given situation. And she probably, my daughter Francesca, will know what I would say in any. And that's, God bless her. That's, you know, that's a heavy burden. I mean, you need rollers on a bag that size. You do.
And you call your mother Mother Mary.
I do.
Which is... Got several meanings.
Well, it's so resonant, you know, for a lapsed Catholic. Although I remember telling Francesca when we were little that we were Catholic, which we're kind of not. And she said, oh, we're collapsed Catholics. And I thought, that's kind of more accurate. But that kind of sorting out the relationship. And I love a little, I think, that even though we're not the conventional family, I'm not sure that the conventional family, I mean, it certainly exists, but right. it isn't the rule. So part of the reason I think we had to get along, find a way to make peace, is because it's us. You know, we just had Thanksgiving. We had signings. People were like, 12 people, 24 people. You know who we had for Thanksgiving? Me and her.
Just the two of you.
Yeah. And now,
and your menagerie, I guess.
Exactly. And you have to go, is that awesome? Mm-hmm. It kind of is. But it's all she's known. And I think to a certain extent, there's so many more unconventional families. I think we kind of speak to them to sort of say, hey, it's okay too.
But do you find you have to bite your tongue? I mean, you might be feeling something about Francesca or worrying about something about Francesca. Do you share it with her? Or do you hold back?
I do. I have learned to hold back more. And I think that's respectful. Because
you have?
that's my turn, right?
I was going to get a really? Second opinion from you.
This is me holding back. And I think that's part, and I've learned to let go. I mean, there's a great joke about what's the difference between an Italian mother and a Rottweiler, and the difference is that a Rottweiler eventually lets go. I think it applies to all mothers. You eventually just sit back a little, because the great thing is, I really do trust her judgment.
Right.
And as I've learned, I'm a great fan of Malcolm Gladwell. You know, read Outliers. It's all about practice. Everything in life is about practice. If you just give your kid practice to make decisions, in other words, get out of their way and or shut up and or don't look and or pretend you don't know, they get really good at it. And she's really good at it.
Now, for your opinion, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to take her word for it that it could be even more. No, but the truth is, it's been funny. This past month, I have been living at home with her because I had to leave my apartment in New York because we had some flood damage.
From Sandy, right?
Right. And the funny thing is, and this might be sort of like emotional baggage, is I really can read her so well. I know her so well that even if she is biting her tongue, I read her face. I can be mad at her for what I know she was going to say. And only a daughter can do that. But, she's always, I'm like, oh, you're rolling your eyes or you're huffing. And I know what that means. I know what you think. But
I didn't huff. I do roll my eyes. That's bad. I know that's bad.
But when you know that and she's not saying that, do you still care? I mean, you still care.
Definitely. I mean, and that's sort of on my end. I have to learn to separate myself from being okay with I might make a decision that's not the way she would make it. Or I might, any aspect of my life, finding my own separation. And I've been so lucky that sort of where an outsider might think with the writing that would be the hardest because she's an author and I'm a new writer really, and that would be where she was so overbearing. But the truth is, my mom has always given me the space to develop as a writer, to find my own voice since high school. And that's really when I started showing interest in it. And, even I was a little, what's this going to be like with my mom being an author? But she has always given me space there. That has never been an issue. We write these separately. She doesn't edit me. That's a choice we both made because I figured, you can get a ton of critics, but you only get one mom, and I have a great one. So I keep her as that.
Well, and it's her voice, right? You don't want to stifle...
No, and it's wonderful voice. And the whole thing is, it's fun to talk about in the context of writing because we're writers, but it's the task of every parent, And even when I was listening to Francesca talking about, learn to not listen to your mother. If your mother doesn't approve, guess what? That's a really important lesson. Yeah. I'm a person, now I'm doing 3 books a year, but I get my grades I get reviewed. I do get really good reviews, which is wonderful, but there's the occasion. I don't even like when there's a negative comment. Yeah. And you have to learn, that's not who you have to please. Who you have to please is yourself. And now I'm at the point where I've learned a little bit and have more confidence that my reader is probably more like me than not.
Not to dig in here, but you do write about the fact that you did get it. Was the Philadelphia Magazine gave you an award for
the worst
something or other?
I am the worst columnist, according to Philadelphia Magazine. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, well, but I wonder, and I think I find this happens when some member of my family gets criticized or attacked. I'm angrier than they are.
They better not run into me.
I want to get the revenge, and they're saying, whatever. You feel that?
I had a hard time thinking that was funny. I was very mad. I mean, we had a good laugh over it, but I might live in New York, but I'm still from Philly, so they should watch out.
And that was the day that it came in, I wrote about it, and then my mother saw it.
Yes.
And then the funny thing, a reader emailed me and said it, and they were really angry, and I was like, my mother's like, you have to go get this. And I'm like, the last thing I want to do is go buy the magazine that just dissed me. But I had to go get it, and she was mad that they didn't mention her.
I see some patterns here. Okay. Let me quickly reintroduce you. Talking with Lisa Scottolini and her daughter Francesca Saratella today, and they do write a column which is read and appears in the Philadelphia Inquirer called Chick Wit, and they have authored some books together, including a new one called Meet Me at Emotional Baggage Claim. And we'd love to hear from the mothers and daughters in our audience. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. So do you have different ways that you write? For instance, for you, Lisa, do you, and you've been doing this for about 20 years now, do you have a certain habit of writing?
I do. I mean, I write every day, and I do, and basically from about 9 till almost 11 at night.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, unless I'm playing hooky and riding a horse or walking the dogs. And I like that. I mean, it works out well. Now, the writing the essays for a book like this, I've gotten it down to maybe a day and a half, because you have to interrupt a novel to do that. And I think it's part of a skill as a writer. You have to sort of learn to juggle different projects. I don't do it often. I only do it for these books and for the novels.
But 9 to 11.
Yeah.
That's a long...
Well, writing, anyone who's listening, you know, I really encourage people to write. And I think that it's a bear for time, and it doesn't benefit from interruption. I put, like the BlackBerry, like texting. I mean, Francesca will tell you that's my big lecture. I mean, I think it just really, I love it, but not when I'm trying to focus.
But are you sitting there just tapping away and then editing away? Or are you there pulling your hair out? Are you there thinking, pacing?
I am, as a person who's divorced twice, you can understand that I act before I really think, so that I don't ever pull my hair out. I just start writing stuff, and then something good will come. I mean, there's all these wonderful phrases. One is, great books aren't written, they're rewritten. That's true. So you see it up there, and you go, okay, now I can work with that. You cannot edit a white page. And so I just start throwing stuff on the wall.
Yeah. How about for you, Francesca?
Yeah, you know, it is a little different because I think even though my mom and I have so many similar interests and loves, our personalities are different. And I feel a little more comfortable with a little more pre-planning and with writing. Just gives me that confidence that I need to go forward with it, because I feel like so much of writing is a mental game of just, you know, feeling like you can do it. So with these columns, I do sort of try to plan them out a little bit. And even when I'm writing fiction, I'm more of an outliner than my mom. But for the most part, I also try to take that lesson from her, so that you do just have to get into it. And so she's always worked with word count goals. That was a lesson that I took, because just to have something for the day, whether it's 500 or 1,000 or even 2,000, if you knock it out of the park like my mom does, helps me get something down. Like she said, get it down, you know, then get it good type of idea. And so that I really have taken from her, but it's still, it pushes me because my personality is a little more planning.
And are you a 9 to 11 typewriter?
You know, I mean, it definitely does take all day. And I try to just do the word counts. It usually takes me about coming close to that. If it really fills a full work day, I usually hit my word count around 8 p.m. And that's good because I burn out by then, honestly. I'm losing focus. And and you've got a lot of dogs around, so you have some fun.
Some fun. And you're living in New York City, and there's, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on out there.
Right. And I have to resist sort of the romanticism of being a writer in New York because I think for even with writing, even if it's creative, you just have to show up and you have to do the time. So I really try to treat it like a normal day job. And that works for, that gets me so that I get these columns done and my fiction and freelancing and whatever I can do. So it gets it done. And then I'm on the schedule with everybody else. So I can, you know, still have fun and take advantage of the city.
Are you surprised about responses you get to some of your columns, your articles, for instance, in the Inquirer?
I am. And I love it.
What people gravitate to or connect with?
I'm always amazed by, if I write about Mother Mary, this book is a lot of Mother Mary about emotional baggage. She visited in the summer. She lived with us this summer. I tried to get her to come up for 6 months, but she lives with my brother in Miami, and that he's much more fun. As she says, you know, all you do is read and write, and he's gay, and he has fun. I don't, you know. But I think the stuff that is, that stuff about her, I think a lot of people see their mother. You know, they'll say, I have Mother Bernice. It doesn't matter ethnicity or religion. That generation is pretty great and also pretty tough. And they survived so much. You know, although they're the greatest generation, I don't want to, I think Francesca's right. It's so easy to romanticize stuff. Mm. You know, there's a part of her sensibility that, you know, the youngest of 19 children that is a little bit blunted and tough.
And this is South Philadelphia,
South,
right?
Philly,
right.
And broke, and, you know, there's lessons in it. And I also love her permission she gives herself to express herself. This is not something I think you come into as a woman a little bit older. You know, we spent, at least in my case, spent a lot of time in my early years editing what I said to make other people happy. And then you start to go, well, this is getting me nowhere. Well, older people don't do that anymore. They've learned that. And my mother is that. I think that resonates. Also the love. There's a ferocity to her love, which I think is great.
Yeah.
I mean, I joke about the column, but really, there's no one. She will hold grudges against anybody who says anything bad about me ever. And damn it, I like that.
Right? I really love with the emails that we get, that how much people open up to us. And I feel like that's always what makes me feel like we must be doing something right, because we are really open about, you know, my mom is open about the aging, or I'm open about if I get dumped, I let it know. And people then wrote me and tell me their stories. I was like, you guys are great. You know, it's really nice.
And how about that flasher? Has he left you alone?
Yes. I mean, I don't want to brag, but I do have a regular flasher. I moved. I just had to move to get away from him.
Really?
But yeah, my friend.
Were you one of many, or he had targeted you somehow?
Were we exclusive? We never had the conversation. I don't know.
Whether he was playing the field.
Exactly, yeah.
But that's the thing about writing, and you know, when you write these essays, you kind of, it's all whatever, you know, where do you get the ideas from it? Well, gee, what's sort of on my mind? Right. Sometimes I go, that's not comment worthy. But I get surprised sometimes if I write about something and I go, that hit home? How did that hit home? Well, you just don't know.
Let me ask you, because you had a thing about buying a snowblower,
okay,
for instance.
Perfect example.
There you go.
I was going to buy a snowblower. I thought about it for a long time, finally did it, and of course didn't even use it. $700,
right.
That's a lot. I mean, honestly. And so many people wrote me about that. And also,
I went through the same thing.
And also, more importantly, I try to find the thing that's common. And the commonality isn't a snowblower.
Right.
The thing is never the thing. The point of the column was that I thought about it for so long, and when I finally did it, it was like kind of too late. People get that. Everyone's lived that. And if you really take your life and you look at it almost under a microscope, and you write about that silliness, it appears to be silly or trivial, it isn't at all.
What does your mother think about the columns that you've written about her?
You know what? We don't even...
Does she talk about it?
She doesn't really talk about it much. She loves that people know her. When she did come to signings last year, and people embraced her, and she wept, and we all wept.
It was estrogen. She signed.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, she signed... Yeah. At 87, she signed hundreds of books.
You mentioned
that she didn't write, by the way. Come on.
We're generous.
You mentioned the fact that your brother Frankie is gay, but you also write in one of the articles that there was complete denial in the family that your brother was gay.
Totally.
From start
the
to finish.
The scuttling means we have denial as an art form. You know, I mean,
he was living with a guy
under the same roof. No, my mom took in his friend, and, you know, they dressed together, and they had matching bulldogs, and we were like, but we loved him, and we do love him, and we love all his friends, and it's a wonderful circle that he has down in Miami, that even though, I mean, their life is not the conventional one, in that he works in a bar, and it's kind of night hours. Like, who would think a night hours guy is going to take care of his mother so wonderfully? But he does, and I admire the caretaking he does. And I'm grateful for it.
Was the denial about it just, it didn't matter, it just never crossed your mind?
I think there's a little of the, I think it's all about kids. So for an Italian grandmother, am I going to have kids now? When he was coming up, gay men weren't adopting babies. And I think that was the heartbreak. There's no more mouths to feed. We need more babies.
And that's Lisa Scottolini joining us along with her daughter, Francesca Saratella. And they write a weekly column in the Philadelphia Inquirer called Chick Wit. And they have also collaborated on a couple of books, including a new one called Meet Me at Emotional Baggage Claim. And we're taking calls again. We want to hear from the moms and daughters in our audience. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Philadelphia Fight supports WHYY and announces the 2012 We Remember Gala, this year honoring the Wistar Institute, Friday, November 30th from 6 to 9 p.m. For more than 20 years, Philadelphia Fight has worked to combat HIV through research, treatment, prevention, and education. The We Remember Gala serves as a reminder that HIV remains a challenge and also honors those lost to the disease. For tickets and details, 215-525-8628 or fight.org.
On the next Fresh Air, a film that begins with terror in the sky.
Southjet 227, we're in an uncontrolled dive. We got a jam stabilizer or something.
Denzel Washington plays a heroic pilot who's an alcoholic in the new movie Flight. We'll talk with the director, Robert Zemeckis, whose previous films include Back to the Future, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and Forrest Gump. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. The president lunches with his former rival, speaks to the country about the fiscal cliff, and there's talk that the move to block Susan Rice is to open a Senate seat in Massachusetts. We'll have a political roundup. Also, Tony Bennett, now, and Zen. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain talking with the mother-daughter writer duo, Lisa Scottolini and Francesca Saratella. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I had kind of framed it as the mother-daughter questions, but of course, parent-child broadens who we can talk to as well. In fact, let me get Jay from Center City, Philadelphia, to join us on Radio Times. And Jay, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi Marty. Thank you. I was wondering, as a divorced and remarried father of an adult daughter, I was wondering what Francesca, and I have to correct you, Marty, there. It's Francesca.
Yeah, I know. I have to say the producer was trying to correct me all during the hour, but go ahead, Jay.
That's all right. I was wondering what Francesca's feelings had been about the relationship when they were together, when Lisa and her husband were together, when the relationship was terminated, and since then. And I'll take my answer off the air.
And I'm assuming, Jay, you want to know because you're the remarried father with an adult daughter?
Right. I have to give a lot of credit to my present wife for her handling of the relationship with my daughter. It is now wonderful and couldn't be better.
That's great.
There were some ups and downs.
Indeed, I'm sure. Jay, thanks for calling in to Radio
Times. Yeah, well, thank
Francesca,
you so much for your question, Jay. You know, I have a great relationship with my dad, and I really always have, but I think that every child whose parents get divorced, you sort of understand that separation. So I know that my mom can make all of her jokes, but I let that be separate. My relationship with my dad has been good, and she has given me the space to have that be separate. But I'm really close to my dad. I actually do really open up to him and, you know, call him, and sometimes I'll tell him about relationships or anything that's going on. He's a really good girl dad, which I think is so nice, in that he's open to hearing that, even if it might make him a little worried, right. Might make him sweat a little
right.
bit. But one time I had a really cute moment where I had told him about a fun weekend where I had met this new guy and I thought maybe I'd see him. And I told my dad this story. And then 2 weeks later, I was in the car with my dad and I found on the back of an envelope, he had written down the names of every friend I had mentioned so that he would remember who I was talking about. So I think I've always really appreciated how involved my dad has stayed. And I guess your question was also about how we worked through that relationship. I don't have many memories of my parents being together. They split up when I was very, very young. So all of my childhood memories with my dad are of us together. And I think even in the divorce, it worked out because my time with him was so special to him that he really prioritized me. And it was always, what are we going to do today? And it was a decision we got to make together. And so we've always been able to carve out that special time and I try to make up for maybe the time that we get lost.
It's really nice. What do you think, Lisa?
Yeah, I think that's. I mean, I think I'm proud of her because I think it's sort of part of what we're saying about reviewers in a way. We can all have different opinions, and we should all respect each other's opinions. In fact, my parents divorced when I was out of the house. In those days, like you waited till you're out of the house for the kids, and in my experience, it wasn't a good one to live in an unhappy house. So. Really, when 3 months in, basically, when I thought my marriage wasn't going to work, we split up. And I think I did that partly so that I could have a happy house. I think her dad had a happy house. And she grew up. Oh, it was kind of funny. When she was in kindergarten, she came home the first day after sharing circle, whatever they call it. she said, Mom, do you know there are kids in my class? where the mommy and the daddy live in the same house. And I was like, well, that's disgusting. What the matter is with these people?
Who'd ever heard of that?
But, you know, it's all over the map these days.
And the remarriage is a thing, too. So, Jay, I really commend you on marrying someone who's embraced your daughter, and I think that's so important, too. My dad is remarried. Actually, he met his wife because I became friends with her daughter in camp.
Oh, there you go.
So it was like a true parent wacky thing. But, you know, and that's, those second families are so important, and it's all family. So it's great that your whole family can embrace your daughter.
And Jay, thanks for calling in. And Francesca, you talk about your relationship with your mother being total bros.
Right. Well, yeah, this idea that we're just all girly shopping shoes all the time is just not true.
The action movies, right?
Definitely. My mom, I mean, and that's the funniest thing about parents. My dad went shopping with me for my prom dress because he has endless patience for shopping. He's such a saint with that, but he also enjoys it. And my mom is the one where we go in every action movie. We get the popcorn. We get the center seats. I mean, we know how to bro out. Definitely.
Although I got the feeling that you're very picky about where you sit. You don't share.
She's picky.
You
what
don't
can
share.
I, tell you? I start to. No, I don't. You know what? I don't want to share my food anymore. I don't want to share my popcorn. I don't want to share my Raisinets. That probably happens to a certain extent when we get older. It's kind of like, you know what? I've compromised enough. Now, I've heard middle-aged women say to me, it's my time. I'm like, I hear you, girl.
My popcorn and my time.
I'll buy you a popcorn. Just get your hands out of my bag.
Exactly. There was a caller, couldn't stay on, but wanted to know about this notion of voice as a writer, finding your voice. And all writers, I think, have struggled with that in their own way. Some have successfully found their voice. Some lose their voice and find it again. What has that been for you, Lisa? You've written, 20-some books?
Something like that. And I really encourage people to write, because I think that we're a nation of storytellers, and we love to talk. And I love more to listen. I think the whole point is to really, it goes back to being true. You know, write something that is really true. Once I told Francesca, you know, because it's especially true in these essays, because they're literally true. So I'm going to write an essay about, you know, finding the first hair on my chin and it's gray and going, okay, I'm turning into an Amish man. How does that feel? Now, every woman's going to have, they're going to have that experience. Right. And so if you're not writing something that doesn't make you cringe, it's not true. And if you write something true, it will be what you feel in your heart and soul, and that's the definition of voice. It's just what you really think inside.
And humor helps. I mean, for you,
and the way
humor
you would
helps.
Tell. For humor, I love to laugh.
Right. Do you think you have similar senses of humor, Francesca?
I think we do have similar senses of humor, but probably very different writing voices. In just finding that authentic trueness for you, like what you're saying, it is all about truth and just not mimicking. I never have tried to mimic her, and I think if you read the essays, they don't necessarily sound like each other, but senses of humor, we definitely laugh the same stuff.
It's interesting because it comes back to radio in a way. I love radio. I listen to you. I've listened to you forever. We're on audiobooks. I think truth does have a ring to it. Like, that is a true thing. Mm. I can always tell a little bit when people are lying because they're not. There's just something that doesn't sound right. And so when people read, I think, I just believe that they are sort of saying the words to themselves. And so we really communicate soul to soul. Maybe it's the way that music gets in or the way brain processes. I don't know. Oliver Sacks would know. Smart people would know.
Yeah.
But I think there's something to that.
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499, covering a lot of territory today in Radio Times, talking with Lisa Scottolini and her daughter, Francesca Saratella. And we have Marlene from Berwyn joining us. Marlene, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Francesca and Lisa. How are you?
Hey, Marlene.
Good, thanks.
I'm the mom of two young daughters, and I'm very, very protective. And I didn't know, I'm sure Lisa can really relate to this, but with the boys and men that come in their life, I never like any of them. They just do not meet my standards. And I just wanted to know if you have, as the mom of a beautiful young daughter, if you have those same standards and how you get over the hurdle of liking the other people that come in, the other males that come into their life.
And Marlene, do you bite your tongue? What do you do when you...
No, I'm Italian.
That's what I figure. You say how you feel, and then what happens?
Then there's like a little separation between my daughters and I because they know that I don't like them.
How old are your daughters, Marlene?
26 and 28.
Okay.
Well, Marlene.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me tell you what I really think. I hear you. I feel you, as the kids say. But the truth is, I guess Dr. Phil would say, what's that getcha? Because if they just shut down, then you lose them. And that's the thing you don't want. So I've learned with anything, whether it's, she'll send me a picture. Do you like this sweater? I go, well, yeah. I mean, I think it, in the long, you got to think long term. If I can just say, Marlene, do you want to know? I think you just think long term. And long term means that in the short term, keep it a little more to yourself. Because if it's better that way. It gives them the room to come to you and say, you know what? He's not what I thought. And the truth is, maybe you're better at the love stuff than me, but I'm divorced twice, so I'm the last person who can say, oh, I pick him great. I got to ask me anything, honey. So, you know, see what I'm saying? I hear you, though. I know it's hard. But short of physical danger that they're in, and I'm protective too, and that is an issue with a mother of a daughter, no matter how old they are. I know parents with that happens too. You might have to bite your tongue a little or tell your girlfriends, but don't tell them.
Can you do that, Marlene?
Great relationship with your daughter. I'm so, that is such a wonderful testimony to me.
It really is.
It's a beautiful, beautiful thing to read about and to hear about, really, truly.
Well,
thank you very much.
Thanks, Marlene, for calling. Okay. And did you want to add something to that, Francesca?
Yeah, I was just going to add that I know daughters sometimes make it hard because I do ask my mom her opinion about anything from my sweater to a boyfriend, and then I might give her a hard time when she gives me the real answer, and I know that's tough, but I think one thing about my mom is I have, you know, in the past when I've taken an ex-boyfriend back, I've really been, even if I don't not let on, she might not know this, so worried about what she would think. And sometimes worried to tell her if a boyfriend does something bad, because I don't want her, I feel like, oh, she'll think I'm stupid for being with him, or she'll think I'm weak for wanting to take him back. And sometimes I'll say to her, you know, oh, I know you think this is dumb, right? Yeah. And I'm worried about that. And it has been the greatest thing and the most strengthening thing when my mom has said, you can handle anything. If you feel like you need to give it another try to know, then give it another try. And knowing that I wasn't going to meet that I told you so when it didn't work out, that has both given me the strength to try, but also given me the strength to actually get out, you know, because I'm not afraid that, oh, I'll prove her right. And so that was what I was thinking of for Marlene. I know that's tough, but you want to be that soft place to fall so that when it doesn't work out and they do think that you're right, they can go back to you.
You have a very nice look on your face.
I know, I'm kind of so proud. Let's go shopping after this.
Anything you want. Yes. Apparently that's not your strong suit, but anyway.
Let's go to a movie. I think it's also about risk. Women and risk is an interesting thing to me. And I think that we don't take enough. And I was reading something the other day that said that women have, their rubric is, I'm not ready. When I'm ready. And so I think people do better in life if they get what they want and they have to take risks to do that. So it's another reason for moms, even though we hate it, to pull back and let your kid take the risk, because your kid will go through trial and error and in the end find the thing that makes her happy. And you're out of the picture. Mm. It doesn't pick someone they choose because you didn't like them. And then you're in that triangle, which is the last thing you want.
But you have to trust them, too.
Yeah, you do. And in the end, it is their mistake.
Yeah.
And I've made plenty myself.
Yeah. So why are Welsh Corgis the best dogs in the entire universe?
Because they never make mistakes. And they always know. And they try to control everybody.
And when did you get your first Corgi?
When she went to college. I felt...
Well, the funny thing is, we say, you're so kind that you say first as if we were braved another one. We love our corgi to pieces, but she is such a little wild thing. We've not found that we've gotten a bunch more of them because there's only one. There's only one queen.
Well, a corgi is a good object lesson for what Marlene was talking about. Like, you cannot control everything. It just makes you growl all the time and people don't like you.
You're a horseback rider as well?
I do. I love animals. More and more, I've just realized how important they are to me. And I think I'm not atypical. I actually was at a library thing and noticed that women were getting, like, who had four divorces had four dogs. Like, this multipleness is a new kind of thing, at least as I've gotten older.
And the horses have been a great thing. Really, that story was, I went to horseback riding camp and really fell in love with it and so started taking lessons. And only after I had been doing it for about 4 years that my mom started getting lessons, which is a little atypical for the typical, like, horse mom type. But it was wonderful because by her joining my interest, it was something we did together then and something we still do together now. And it's so nice that when I come home that we have that instant, oh, let's go out for a ride. And sometimes now I go, and, you know, before it was her watching me with all my 13-year-old riding friends. Now I go with they're all my friends' moms. And we all ride together.
An older set, right?
Right. And I have to, like, speak for all of the kids, but it's good.
Let me get April, looks like, calling us from Westchester. April, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Do we have April?
I have a 14-year-old daughter that loves to write, and she's been writing ever since she could spell. And I was wondering if you had any advice on how I could encourage and help her grow.
Well, that's wonderful. Lisa. You've done good, April. Buy her a journal and encourage her to write in every day. And never, you probably wouldn't anyway, but never criticize her. Writing is really, we're talking about finding your own voice, and you can only do it if you give yourself permission to let your voice flow. And you won't do that if you think, oh, I'm going to misspell it or something like that. And also read. And read anything. And no value judgments about it. If it's a comic book, great. If it's the back of a cereal box, great. Whatever your child wants to read, but just keep them reading. Reading and writing.
What do you think, Francesca?
Yeah, I would say similar. My mom was always excited about anything that I wrote, and if I had done that. And definitely with the reading. And you're right, you did not judge me, because I would be reading, I'd take a stab at A Tale of Two Cities, and then I really loved Archie comics. But I think they taught me a lot about plot, so you never know. But that's so wonderful that you already are so encouraging that your daughter likes it, and especially for girls, because you're afraid of... You want to do the right thing and you want to do it well. Girls, I felt I was always embarrassed of messing up, especially in front of the people who I care about. And even though we're so comfortable with our moms that we can get in stupid fights and slam doors, truthfully, your mom is who you want that approval so, so badly. So.
And what's also so great about it for girls is I think we tend to be good at, like, give us the task, we'll do it. We'll get an A+. But that requires somebody to give you the task. And this more and more is a world that doesn't give you the task. The jobs aren't there. You have to make the job. So that's great that your daughter is showing that initiative. And really, secretly, what you want to encourage is her doing, just finding it, her being proactive, as much as I dislike that word. That's what you really want.
April, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Final question to you, Francesca. Do you still enjoy The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills?
Yes, I do. I admit that that franchise is a guilty pleasure of mine. I love Lisa Vanderpump, and I moved and on from Camille Grammer, and I just I love them all. My mom and I, but we analyze them like they're real characters in a great novel.
Indeed. Well, it allows one to be really snarky in front of the TV set, don't you?
I love those women.
I kind of do, too.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Lisa Scottolini and her daughter, Francesca Saratella, and their book is called Meet Me at Emotional Baggage Claim. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. We put some pictures on our Facebook page. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us. And coming up next, it's Here and Now.